Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to another podcast. I'm Harry Brady and this is CelticUnderground.net.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
We are just three games away from being invincible for the whole season. We have the Thistle game coming up as we record this, then the Hearts Trophy Day, where they get there early and get your money out because it is the Celtic FC Foundation Badge Collection Day, and there is also going to be a display in the entire ground organised by the Green Brigade. From that we then obviously have the Cup Final for the Treble. So I decided to engage the services of St Anthony straight from his hospital bed to discuss the team of late, since he's been suffering from his woes, and particularly the Aberdeen game and the Thistle game coming up. And then we also discuss the forthcoming challenges of possible parking restrictions around Celtic Park. If you want to get in contact with us, discuss anything about the podcast, obviously rating us on iTunes would be fantastic. You can email podcasts, that plural, podcasts at CelticUnderground.net. We're obviously all on Twitter. There's me, Harry Brady, CU. There's the main Twitter account still run by Eddie Pearson from his caves at Celtic Rumours. There's Hullboy. There's Stephen4_2, which is St Anthony. There's Lackey Moore. There's Mark Cooper. And there are other hidden gems amongst our team. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, St Anthony.
Bring me sunshine, bring me love.
Hey. So I'm joined now by St Anthony. Saint, how is your health?
Thanks for asking, Harry. I'm fine settle now. I had a wee bit of trouble with the gallbladder, and it's been ripped out through keyhole surgery. So I'm happy to say that I'm back to 100% just about, apart from four wee scars that are dotted all over. But happy to say that I'm on the road to recovery.
When did you go in?
3 weeks ago. It was the day after the semi-final against Rangers. 7 o'clock in the morning, you've got to go in it these days to get admitted, which is really early. And there was 30 people in front of me in the queue at 7 in the morning. It was quite an eye-opener to see how the health service operates at that level. And I still get taken in time, and they kept me in overnight after it, and then I was let out on a Tuesday, and I've been fine ever since.
Excellent. I take it then, as a consequence of it being after the Cup semi-final, there was no ability for you to celebrate in the down the pub?
No, that's right, because you've got to fast before it and stuff. But no, I was more worried about the semi-final, to be honest, than I was about getting into for the op. But I'm happy to say that both turned out well.
Brendan, did you proud?
He did.
So what were your... So you were then... You were then recuperating for the Ibrox result?
Yeah, a friend of mine kindly came and got me in his car because I couldn't drive, and we went over to his house and watched it, and it was fantastic.
I bet you, do you know, it's only just I'm speaking to you and I'm thinking, well, you having to be really careful with stitches and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you're cheering and roaring and stuff, and you're a wee twinge here and there, but the only if there is a disappointment on the day, it could have been more severe for Rangers. I mean, it could easily have been 8 or 9. It was absolutely sensational stuff.
Do you know, I was leaving the ground, and obviously you're in amongst Celtic supporters, so you're all thinking the same way about how brilliant it was, and then you're thinking, you know, are we going over the top? Because of, you know, around an innate biases, our inbuilt bias, and then you get in the car, and it's absolutely marvellous to hear former Rangers players on Radio Scotland saying, "I was embarrassed to say that I was connected." I mean, obviously we know they were a different club, but yeah, I was embarrassed to be connected with that, and they were saying it could have been 8 or 9, and when you hear Rangers people saying it could have been 8 or 9, you absolutely know. I mean, the only thing that got me was once when they scored, all I wanted was that we scored one more goal so that the last goal was scored by us.
Well, was a wee bit miffed when they scored, but I think Lustig's goal was the icing on the cake. I mean, for a big gangly right back to run up the park and show that amount of skill and curl the ball into the corner of the net, you know, if we had a new centre forward that scored the goal like that, we'd be raving about him.
Do you know, it's funny, I was saying this to someone at the weekend, how sometimes at a game something looks a harder chance than it does on the telly, and sometimes at a game something looks an easier chance than it does on the telly. And two examples of that was, see at the game of the cup semi-final for McGregor's goal, where I was, I'm looking right down, Dembele plays the ball back to McGregor. And as the ball's coming back to McGregor at the game, I'm thinking, all he needs to do is side foot this and it's passed it into the back of the net. On the telly, he's got this brilliant curling shot that curls in and goes in off the post. See where Lustig's goal, see at the game, ball goes to Lustig. And you're thinking, just keep running with this. There's nobody between you. Just keep going. On the telly, it looks like this brilliant, mazy run. But in the game, you're just seeing everything opening up in front of him, thinking, it's like the partner in the Red Sea here. They're just moving aside, letting him. Obviously, they're expecting him, as you say, a big gangly right back. They're expecting him to pass it. So they're all going left and right to for the pass. And he's just coming through the middle. So, yeah, it was excellent. So then if I go to the most recent game, was the Aberdeen game.
Yep.
On Friday night. So did you see the game?
Yes, I did.
So what were your thoughts on it?
I thought we opened up well and we were out of sight within, was it 12 minutes or so?
Aye.
And then after that, there's been a lot of talk about Aberdeen huffing and puffing. And sure, they had the better of the rest of the game, but they certainly had a lot of possession and they huffed and puffed. But my point would be that Celtic had another gear at least to go up, if not two. And there's, you know, when you're 3-1 up and nothing's at stake, what's the point of knocking your pan in? So I think Celtic were perfectly professional in their approach. And you know, after you go 3-0 up, then you can sort of see it out for the rest of the game.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that was my take. For a variety of reasons, I missed, you know, small chunks of the game. But my overall picture of it was, it gets back to sometimes, you know, people saying, you know, when a team's 5-0 up at half time and then the second half finishes 1-1. Well, let's put ourselves in the position of these players are human beings. They have won the league. They are one win away from the treble. They are 3-0 up at the second best team in Scotland within 12 minutes. It must be really difficult. It's not like we had to win the game 6-0 to win the league.
No.
So it must be really difficult at 3-0 after 12 minutes to not then take your foot off the gas.
I think that's only natural. I mean, it's like anything else. If something is too easy or you do something for so long, then you maybe take your eye off the ball a wee bit. But I still maintain that if Aberdeen had a go at 3-2, then we'd have another gear at least.
Do you think it was a penalty?
But what was that?
Do you think it was a penalty to Aberdeen?
The shinny one?
Aye.
I have to say no, I don't think it was a penalty. In all honesty, I'm not just saying that because I'm a Celtic fan, but with the ball come through, I definitely think that Gordon makes contact with it and diverts the ball away, and then if anything, shinny goes into him.
And then the sort of press coverage afterwards was very much Aberdeen won the game 1-3.
You know, people were saying that if it was a 7-8 minute game, then Aberdeen would have won. So,
but it gets back to the point we've just discussed. If it was a 7-8 minute game, we'd have started the game 0-0, and we wouldn't have played the same way. Goals change games.
I think the press are keen to talk Aberdeen up before the cup final because obviously there's a hope there that maybe for the press members who are anti-Celtic, they don't want Celtic to get the treble, and for the press members that are decent sorts, then they're hoping for to spread the trophies around a wee bit, you know, rather than Celtic run away with everything. But you know, listen, I heard a wee bit of Radio Scotland afterwards, and they were almost gushing at the Aberdeen's performance for the 80 minutes.
The other way of looking at that is,
Aberdeen, I think it's a compliment to us in some ways.
Well, I was going to say, the other way of looking at it is, Aberdeen had, according to that, Aberdeen were the better team for 80 minutes, and they scored a goal.
Mm-hmm.
At home, Aberdeen, according to those types of press, those members of the press who were saying, oh, Aberdeen, they were the dominant team. They were the dominant team for 80 minutes, according to them, at home, mm-hmm. and only managed to score one goal, with Celtic containing them. I thought we missed Scott Brown in the middle of the park.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that he this season in particular, he's added something. He adds a dimension to the team. He's a motivator. He's a captain. His presence is now very important to Celtic. And as you said there, that when he's not there, it's maybe a sign of how much you take him for granted. That when he's there, he maybe not appreciate it, but when he's not there, then he's missed.
I just thought he would have taken the steam out of times when Aberdeen had the ball. You know, he may get criticised for committing fouls, but actually, in general, the odd exception, but in general, the amount of time he's had in the game, he's very clever at committing wee fouls that he gets away with, but just stops the flow of the game. That type of thing.
And he's good also at, he's got this thing about he noises up the opposition fans and even some of the opposition players. So that's always something that takes the pressure off the other players and lets them get on with it, so that he takes the burden, if you like, of the criticism that's coming the way of the Celtic players.
So we've beaten Aberdeen, so we've now got Thistle on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And then Hearts on Sunday for the first part of being the Invincibles, of going the domestic league season unbeaten.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we'll attain that?
I didn't a few weeks back. I have to say, people started talking about the Invincibles thing and going unbeaten around about March, and I thought, you know, that's a big ask. There's a few hard away games coming up, Potosi being one of them, and we've negotiated them well. We've beat teams, we're not just beating teams, but we're absolutely third in them. And I remember we were in the same position with Martin O'Neill back in 2004. There was something like 35 games, and we'd won 34, was it 34? I think it was only one draw, and there was more than one draw. There was a couple of draws, and we'd won the rest of them. And there was talk then about being unbeaten. But what happened to O'Neill's team was he gave McGeady his debut, for example, and he brought in guys like Jamie Smith and Momo Silla, guys who were like fringe players at the time, because he had the cup final against Dunfermline coming up, and he was determined to keep his best team. And it ended up, we lost two daft home games in the end, but we lost one at Aberdeen in the last minute, which is a game that I will always remember, because that was the night my son was born.
Right.
And then,
my wife gets me into trouble for remembering events in our, we've been together nearly 30 years, my wife gets me into trouble for remembering events based on Celtic games.
Well, I'm the same. I think anybody listening to this in similar circumstances knows what we mean when we start talking about that. Another game as well, it was a stupid defeat, which we played Dunfermline on a sunny day at Parkhead, and we get beat 2-1 as well. So I think if O'Neill had played stronger teams, then he would have been the first Invincible Celtic team. I think off the top of my head, it was like the 35th and 36th league game that we lost. So that worried me this time, because I thought maybe Brendan will start winding down a wee bit, but again, he's got the cup final coming up. But judging by Friday's performance, the players, I think, realise that they're on the verge of something memorable here. They could achieve something in the next few weeks that will be remembered for an awful long time to come. And I get the feeling that the hunger is there to do it this time. Whereas I don't think O'Neill saw that as a worthy, whatever reason. I don't think he was enamoured with going through the season unbeaten as long as he won the league. But I think Brendan Rodgers seems to have the team motivated, certainly, and they were well up for it on Friday.
I suppose one of the things is Brendan Rodgers isn't facing a team full of cheats. Martin O'Neill was having to compete with a team fueled and created by you and I. I mean, everybody listening to this podcast pay for Martin. Well, everybody in the UK listening to this podcast pay for the Rangers team at that time if they were attacked.
Well, because the taxpayer got hammered. Yeah, shaft, shall we say? And as well as 200 odd other creditors.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they had the questionable tax thing, you know, the EBTs.
Well, it's not quite, I mean, one of the decent things, I mean, obviously we can't comment on the court case, but one of the decent things is we now know that they knew they were cheating.
Yeah, well, McLeish let that slip out of the bag at one of the documentaries.
Well, apart from David Murray, who's got terrible amnesia, the rest of them have all stated under oath in a court of law that they knew they were cheating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
well, they knew that the only way that they could sign those players to compete with Celtic was through this questionable...
No, through questionable. The wee tax case was against the law and they knew it.
Oh, right.
So they knew that one. And then they got QC's advice that they were unlikely to win the big tax case.
Yeah.
So, in defence of Martin O'Neill, he was up against cheats. So he was up against a steroid-fueled, you know, it's like criticising an athlete for not winning an Olympic medal during the time of Ben Johnson and whoever else was on drugs at the time. So...
Well, that's a comparison. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So,
do you think maybe Brendan being such a big Celtic fan steeped in the history of the club more than Martin O'Neill? Martin O'Neill was a Celtic fan, but I don't think if you were to go into the detail he would give you what Brendan can.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that maybe pushes Brendan to be more attuned to wanting to make history?
Possibly. I think it may be more the case of he knows how much work the players have put in it during the course of the season, and it would be a real disappointment somehow if they slipped up along the way and maybe only one stupid performance along through the season. So I take about what you're saying there about Brendan having more of a Celtic pedigree, I think, than Martin did. Although I think they've got quite similar backgrounds in some ways, even though there's a wee age gap there. I just think Brendan, being the thorough professional that he is, he wants to win every game, and he wants to entertain the fans in every game as well.
So, this morning, and I was chatting to someone work-wise, they're a casual football fan, not a football casual, casual football fan, and they were asking about this unbeaten run, and they said, so what do you think the biggest threat is? Do you think it'll be on cup final day, or do you think it's taking their eye off the ball against Partick Thistle on Thursday night? What do you think the biggest threat to the unbeaten run is? And I said, if Bobby Madden gets the referee one of the last three games.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, Bobby Madden's been appointed for the cup final.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on that?
I'm not as maybe sceptical as you. I think the chips in my shoulder are even, because I just think one's as bad as the other. I don't have any faith in any of them, to be honest. Although I do think that the referee in the 5-1 game at Ibrox had a good game. In terms of the fact that he got the big decisions right, like Roberts being fouled with a penalty, Simunovic tackling Kenny Miller, which was perfectly legitimate. So, from that point of view, I don't think Madden's any worse than Colm, who's any worse than anybody else. I have a low regard for the whole lot of them. It's a collection rather than individuals.
I was speaking to a Hearts fan today who was at Ibrox, and we were just talking about Hearts and where they might go, and he was talking about how in the second half, when Hearts were 10 men, they were leaps and bounds better than Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
And his exact quote was, if we didn't have that cheat Madden referee in the game, I think we'd have won it.
Mm-hmm.
That was his exact quote. Because he thinks Hearts should have got a penalty. Doesn't think the Hearts player shouldn't have been sent, wasn't a red card. If it was a red card, Hearts should have got a second penalty in the second half. For exactly the same thing happened in the second half, and Hearts should have got a penalty. Was it, I mean, I've not seen it, so I don't know. So that was his point, and I just think of the 1-1 game between Rangers and when Rangers came to Celtic Park this season, and the Holt challenge on Patrick Roberts, which was a red card, and he waved.
Was that one at Hamden?
No, that was at Celtic Park.
Was Celtic Park, right?
The whole one at Celtic Park.
That was Halliday.
No, there was it not Holt on Roberts?
No, the one I'm thinking in the semi was Halliday.
Yeah. Where he, it was the same as Halliday's, and he didn't even, I mean, Halliday's was bad getting a yellow when everybody accepted it was a red. He didn't even give a foul, and Holt nearly scored. Then there was a penalty in the last minute, which last was a penalty. And I just felt that's the type of refereeing we will get. So in my lifetime, Celtic have won one treble. Because I was born in 70.
All right, you missed it in 69 then.
So I missed it in 69.
And 67 as well.
And 67.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody listening to this podcast would take too long to tell you why our trebles are so few and far between. You just need to look at why Ronnie Dyla didn't win a treble in his first season.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was one of the most ludicrous decisions ever. It remains the Inverness Cali one where the guy handled it in the line and the three of them watching it.
Yeah, the guy behind the goals is less than 6 feet away. Yeah,
there's a triangle there. There's a linesman, there's a referee, and there's a guy behind the goal. And between the three of them, they stood and watched a guy basically punch the ball off the goal line. And the three of them played on. Now, I can accept that maybe one out of the three never saw it, and the unlikely outcome that three of them might not have saw it, but no way did all three of them miss that. And that's just real badness as far as I'm concerned. But which is why I make the point that I don't think that Madden or Colm or Beaton or anybody else is any worse than anybody else. I think it's a collective for me. So it does, they take turns, you know. It's almost as if the somebody else's turn to go in the limelight and spoil, go against Celtic, as far as I'm concerned.
So we've got this. You know, it's averaging what, once every 20 years? So we've won four trebles in 50 years. If we win this treble, four in 50 years, and none in the preceding 80 years, more or less 80. So it's a unique event coming up.
Certainly.
Would you rest players against Thistle and Hearts, or would you play our first team? Our first choice 11 against Thistle and Hearts.
The Thistle and Hearts games are coming fairly close to each other. Thursday and Sunday's quite close. So I wouldn't be surprised if Brendan chopped and changed a wee bit. But I think what he'll do is he'll keep a strong bench. And our bench recently, I have to say, has been quite impressive, because guys are coming off the bench and doing a real good turn. You know, they're fighting for places and they're making competition keen. For example, when Dembele got injured there, Griffiths has come in, and Callum McGregor wasn't always in the team, but he's came at the fore, and Tom Brogdon is coming back to injury. So you've got these things are all happening at a good time, and I do think that Brendan's going to go for it, because three games left in the space of roughly 10 days, it's not a lot to ask, and it's quite an exciting period as well, because there is a wee bit to be achieved, and I think that they do have something to aim for. It's not like as if they're just seeing at the end of the season through complacency and going through the motions. I really do think there's a keen desire in a Celtic team to really set their mark and be remembered for a long time to come.
You mentioned someone there that I wanted to ask about. What's your thoughts been on Rogic since he's come back from injury?
I thought the first few games that he played, he was rusty. Mm-hmm. But I think Rogic isn't the he's not the fastest guy in the world. He's got wonderful feet for a big man, and he's got a powerful shot in him. And he's a player that I really like, but he's not really the kind of guy. He can look slow and cumbersome at times in midfield when he's fully fit. And I just think when he came back there, that it took him a long time to find his feet. And as I said, he looked a wee bit rusty to me. It looked as if he hadn't played for a long while, which has obviously been the case. But I do think as each game passes, he'll get stronger and stronger, and you might see the best of him, hopefully, in the next three games. He was really unlucky at Pittodrie. A wonderful bit of skill when he lifted it by the guy into the box, and then he volleyed the shot off the goalkeeper. So he's always capable of things like that, Rogic, and he's had a great season, and hopefully in the next three games he might even add to the good things that he's done so far this season.
I just felt since he's come back, and I thought the Aberdeen game was one of these ones where the game's sort of almost passing him by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like arriving at the ball a second after it's gone to somebody else when he's trying to close people down, and you know, getting caught in possession. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure it's one of these. It's just simply down to he's rusty and needs game time. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a catch 22 if he's not getting time on the ball in the game.
Yeah,
it's difficult to give him the game time if he's not actually contributing during the game.
I think that the thing about Rogic is he's quite a. He's not a physical player. He's not going to jump any challenges, and he's not particularly mobile either. But certainly, he brings attributes to the team that not many of the rest of them have. For example, he's a goal scoring midfielder, and he's a wonderfully creative person. And the one thing I was really impressed with this season, from maybe about August through to in November, was he linked the midfield and the attack superbly. He played in that sort of hole behind the striker.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sublime in some of the games he played. He was, I'm thinking maybe the League Cup final, for example, he was tremendous. And I think that was the fix that he's been this season from August through to November. Unfortunately, he got the injury. So the hope is that certainly in the next few games that he finds his feet again, and that during the summer he can get back to full match fitness so that he's ready to go in August.
So, you would pretty much play the first team?
Yeah, I don't see a problem in that, because there is only three games left, and I don't think it's a hardship, because, as I said, there is things to be played for, there's records to be achieved, there's goals to be aimed for, and obviously you've got the cup final and the treble coming in the last game against, or the opportunity for the treble certainly, in the last game at Hampden against Aberdeen. So I think he'll chop and change slightly. I don't think he'll make major changes. You know, I think he might play something like Gumbo at right back instead of Lustig, or he might play Shevchenko instead of Simunovic in one of the games at least, just to freshen things up a wee bit, maybe to give a couple of players a rest, or maybe carry Knox or something. And then you've always got the option for James Forrest or Patrick Roberts in the right wing, because
yep.
He's alternated between the two of them this season, so it wouldn't surprise me to see Forrest get a game or two
mm-hmm.
before the final, and maybe try and fight his way back in there.
So one thing that I also wanted to get you on the podcast about, because we obviously need to talk about the team and the team performances, but there's one other thing I wanted to get you on the podcast about, because it's something that's exercised both you and I, is the potential parking issue around Celtic Park. If you're not a regular visitor to Celtic Park, you might not be aware of it. So, and if you are, and you're not online and social media, you might not be aware of it. So do you want to tell people what the gist of it is?
Yeah, well, basically, you and I have put articles on Celtic Underground cataloguing what's been happening. So really what it is Glasgow Council have this harebrained scheme that they want to put a parking restriction around a kilometre's radius around Celtic Park, which would mean that unless you have some sort of permit, that you can't park in the areas that traditionally the fans have parked in up until now. Now, I think what they don't appreciate is people are still going to want to bring their cars, therefore they're going to park further away. So rather than having a parking situation around Celtic Park, which I think the locals as far as I can gather, are I'm not sure they find it a nuisance at times, but I think that they're used to it because Celtic Park has been there a hell of a lot longer than they have, or their houses have. So you must sort of expect parking issues on a match day, which only happens maybe once a fortnight through the course of a 9-month season. But what's going to happen then?
If you think about it, out of 365 days in a year,
Yeah, 25 home games.
25 home games, if you include
exactly. To me, another thing I have to say is as well, I'm born and bred in Govan, and I stayed in Crossland Road where Rangers fans parked their car, and I know what we kid on about Celtic and Rangers and stuff, but there was an appreciation that Rangers fans have to park somewhere when they come to the games. And again, Ibrox was there an awful lot longer before we were. So again, there was an appreciation that you might not like it at times because you can't get parked so close to your house that you would like. But it does only happen occasionally, and it's one of these things. So the problem comes, I think the council showing that the folly is that when you put this radius in place, if it comes to pass, then people, you're just going to move the problem in areas like the Carlton and Toll Cross and Shettleston, and maybe even Duke Street run about Coyers restaurant. So you're going to get those people up in arms. So what do you do again? Do you put two kilometres restriction? So it's absolute folly. It hasn't been thought through well, and I'll let you take it forward from here on in, because I know you've done a lot of research into the trains and the buses.
Well, I used to take the train to Dumarnock Station and then walk up, and then they closed them. And Dumarnock Station was like many stations across Scotland. They'd been built a very long time ago, and not a penny had been spent on it since.
No.
There was always running water there. I remember joking with one of my mates that if a third world war came along and there was a nuclear fallout, I know where I'd go and get some fresh running water, because there was always some running under the tracks, running down the tracks at Dumarnock Station. But they closed it. This is where my point in this all started. They closed it for the Commonwealth Games refurb, and then reopened it 3/4 finished. And I wrote to... It was one of those situations where they'd also changed the road configuration, and you write to ScotRail and you talk about the station and the road, and they say, well, the road isn't us. And then you write to the roads department and they say, well, the management of people on the road is the police. And you write to the police and they say, well, we don't build the infrastructure, you need to speak to them. And then you speak, you know, that way everybody's telling you, it's somebody. There's nobody saying, I'm in charge, hands up. But my big point was, they'd spent £12 million on Dumarnock Station and they'd made it less safe on a match day, because the flow of people used to be, if the steps came along and the flow of people was down the platform, and they changed the angle of the steps so that the flow of people was across the platform. So the pressure of people coming on, and then the junction outside was not great, and particularly at night games when it's raining, people are trying to get the way across because it's pouring with rain. As a, you know, any driver will tell you, it's not as easy to see when it's pouring with rain and dark as it is in daylight. And so I was writing to all these people saying it's not very safe. And then compounded with all of that, ScotRail brought in a new... The other thing that compounded was, you never knew whether there was going to be 3 carriages or 6 carriages that turned up. And ScotRail then reduced some of the train services. So all of these things got me right.
You're making good points here, because the council don't appreciate that public transport in this country is a shambles, and especially around about the area of Celtic Park. I mean, when you hear the I know people who have been to Germany recently for football games, and the infrastructure is so much better there. You know, there's designated transport in terms of buses and trains that take the fans to the park and take them back again, and there's much more entertainment around about the stadium. There's much more recreational restaurants and pubs and stuff, and just everything's geared towards making it a good day out. Whereas in this country, I think we've got the road to actually scunner people and no wanting to attend games.
And all of this got back to the way I was being dealt with on this. All got back to this whole thing of football's a shitty down market thing for down market people, and we have no interest in making their lives better and enhancing facilities for them. And one of the things I made the point was, that suddenly, you know, I complained about Dumbarton Station not being safe, and suddenly there was police and staff monitoring people on the platform and stopping people getting on the platform when the platform was full. So that then got me to go back to ScotRail and say, right, I've written to you, you've now done this. So either Dumbarton Station is not safe and has never been safe and you couldn't be asked to deal with it, or you've made it less safe. It can only be one of the two, that you used to just not have any staff, no police, and people would just get on the platform. You've now spent all this money. Me and maybe some others, although people are terrible at not complaining, have written to you, pointed out an issue, and you're now controlling the flow of people and the police monitoring and shutting the platform when it's full.
Well, I have to say something. When I first put the article on Celtic Underground, I'm sure I can check it again, but I'm sure we had something like 22,000 hits. Now, that's astronomical for our wee website. You know, that's an awful lot of people. So I think it goes to show the volume of discontent or certainly objection that people have with a view to this. And if that's reflected in the correspondence that's going to the council in terms of emails and letters and stuff, then I'm sure they're no doubt how strongly people feel about it.
Unfortunately, that's not the case, because people don't actually write in and complain. So, you know, there was an occasion once where I was on the train. The train came into the station. It was a three-carriage train. One of the carriages was put out of commission, so there's only two carriages that we could get into. This was Cambus Lang Station, and the platform was full because they changed the layout. What actually tends to happen, it used to be two trains went through and you could get two trains that went through Cambus Lang Station that went to Celtic Park. They changed the timetable. So actually what happens is a train comes into Cambus Lang Station, about 50 to 100 people get off, wait for 2 minutes for the next train, and they all then have to get on the next train for Dumbarton, but that train's already full with Celtic fans, right? So on this occasion, the train is full, the driver's trying to get everybody off Cambus Lang Station. I end up, along with 10 other people, actually standing in the driver's cab. The train then pulls into Dumbarton and the driver doesn't open the doors because the train's too full. Then we get into Dumbarton, and it's all caused by change of timetable, three-carriage train, one of the carriages being off. I contact ScotRail, and all these people, all the way up, as you can imagine, everybody's whinging their head off on the way from Dumbarton Station to Celtic Park. I get into work on the Monday, phone ScotRail. They have no record of any of this. I write to ScotRail, and they write back questioning whether what I'm saying happened, because nobody else complained. People don't complain formally, so that's how they get away with it.
Yeah, it would be better if people did complain to the council and it made their feelings known. But the thing as well is, the council are trying to encourage people not to take their cars to the football. Now, I'm sorry, this is the 21st century. That is totally, totally unrealistic, because people travel a distance to come to Celtic Park. They're entitled to come in the comfort of their car. They're entitled to come when it suits them and leave when it suits them, rather than being at the mercy of trains and buses, which are unreliable. Now, and for my own case, I would say that I stay in the Renfrew area. And on a Saturday for a home game, my son plays football. So by the time I get him home and you get him washed and showered and get him a wee bit of lunch, we're lucky to make the game for 3 o'clock. Very often we pull in behind London Road Police Station and amongst it isn't residential there. It's warehouses and factories and stuff. Which don't open on Saturdays or Sundays, so why the reason why you can't park there is totally beyond me. So we park in there, and it's a mad, sometimes it's a mad sprint at 5 to 3 to get up the stairs and into your seat in time for the kickoff. Now that's because that is our schedule, if you like, for Saturdays, and people might say, oh, you know, well, you might just need to leave earlier. I can't leave earlier. If I'm going to get to the, it's either that or I don't buy a season ticket, and I hope Celtic are taking this seriously, because
oh, they are.
I've spoken I know that. I'm not criticising Celtic. I'm just trying to make the point that I hope the club really put their full weight behind this, because I've spoke to a number of people and who take maybe like a father or a grandfather or an uncle, a fairly elderly person. And they're saying, if they have to park a kilometre away and walk on winter's days when it's bucketing the rain and maybe even snowing, there's no way that they're going to go. And I think that will affect, it will definitely affect Celtic's attendances. Well, it will definitely affect Celtic's finance, which is why I hope that the club are taking a strong line here.
So there'll be people listening to this who are not car drivers who might be saying, well, use public transport. Let's use public transport. So I phoned Glasgow City Council. You know, I've been banging on about this directly with them for since they did the Commonwealth Games train station. I phoned Glasgow City Council and said, because I'd written to them as well, and so I'd said, your whole objective of this is to take people out of cars onto the road. Now, one of the reasons for doing it, to be fair, is because some people are arseholes. Celtic are just a cross section of society. There are people who park. There are people who park in people's driveways. There are people who park across driveways. There are people who park so that emergency vehicles cannot get into streets. So I know, for example, the Bellway flats that are next, that were just being built in the old Iron Brew factory. There was an incident at the beginning of this season where a fire engine couldn't get in because of the way people had parked. And I also am aware of instances in the Commonwealth Games, Athletes Village, and the tenements diagonally behind the Rangers end, where ambulances haven't been able to get in to streets because of the way people are parked, right? So those are obnoxious people who only think of themselves. And
they deserve to be towed away then, and there is sufficient legislation at the moment for dealing with the kind of things without the draconian action of punishing everybody else.
Correct. So I phone the council and I say, right, you're wanting to get rid of all these cars because that's what their email correspondence has been. But you need to know how many cars you want. You're needing to know how many people you're looking to disperse to be able to find out if there is. My whole point is, it's all well and good to say we want public these people to move to public transport. Could public transport actually cope with them? So when I spoke, Glasgow City Council told me that they estimated that this would affect approximately 7,000 cars. Right? So between us, I then said, right, okay, let's be conservative here and say that the average car is taking two people. It's probably taking something like 2.5 or something like that. You know, there'll be some people going their own, but lots of people going twos and threes and fours and fives. So say it's two. That is 14,000 people that you suddenly are wanting to shift from cars to public transport. Let's look at it. Can they go by train? Well, I don't know. We're in discussions with ScotRail. Well, from a public safety perspective, because obviously, you know, I studied the Taylor report and, you know, the crushing of, from a public safety perspective, you want that whole crowd to be dispersed within an hour of the final whistle. Okay? So let's look at, we're trying to shift 14,000 people in 1 hour. You can't put them on the trains because the capacity of Dumbarnock Station, the nearest station, is 1,800 people an hour. It's already at capacity. ScotRail have told me that. Now, Glasgow City Council tell me they don't know. Well, maybe just pick up the bloody phone, because that's all I did.
They should know, that they're actually paid to know.
Yeah, it's already at capacity of 1,800 people an hour. When the last Celtic Motherwell game, the queue for Dumbarnock Station was to the traffic lights going into the Emirates Arena. So it's already at capacity. So that's 14,000 people cannot go by train. So that means 14,000 people going by bus. If there's 50 people per bus, 14,000 people going on, 50 people per bus, is 280 buses need to leave Celtic Park. Sorry, 280 additional buses need to leave Celtic Park in the hour. Where are these buses coming from? First Bus don't have a spare 280 buses sitting in a terminal somewhere.
Yep.
When I started saying this to the woman, she got very, or the lady, start to sound pejorative. When I started saying this to the lady, she got very defensive. then told me, well, it's not their problem. These people just need to stop taking cars to the game. To which I then said, well, see, there's lots of people who, I gave your example, I gave examples of people like Hullboy in our podcast and many other people who come from far afield to Celtic Park who travel in along the M8 from the east, who travel down the M73 and M80 from the north and east, who travel up the M74, all who would come off the motorway at Celtic Park, more or less. So I said to her, are you going to build a giant park and ride at the motorway? No, we wouldn't do that. There's plenty of car parks in Glasgow city centre. So all those people have got to drive to Glasgow city centre, adding extra pollution, to then park their car in all the car parks along with the shoppers, so filling up the car parks, and then get public transport in. Uh-huh. Right, so you're asking people who might travel from further afield, so they might have an hour and a half, 2 hours, 2.5, 3 hours travelling time to and from a game, so 2 hours there and 2 hours back. You're asking those people to add an extra hour and a half there and an hour and a half back on their travel, because they've got to drive past Celtic Park, at least get into town an hour before kickoff, to then get the public transport back out. Mm-hmm. Well, that's Celtic's responsibility. Celtic should be paying the council for park and ride.
No, I don't think so. I mean, has to be said that there's been a change in council since this was mooted. The Labour majority has been lost, and the SNP have took over, although I don't think they've got a control on interest. Which is going to be interesting to see if this idea that they've got on the is going to be put in the back burner, for example.
I was hoping that until I went to the fans forum last week. Mm-hmm. So, for those people who are at Ibrox, the 7,500 Celtic fans who are at Ibrox, there was a video played at halftime, which we all was hilarious, right? It was just, anybody in charge of the PR at Ibrox should have said, pull that video at halftime. It was a video of local school kids in Ibrox, and they were writing down what they think of Ibrox. They had to write down, and they were writing things like scary, frightening, dirty, right? And this is on the screen, they're holding up these big pieces of paper. And then they're showing you around Ibrox with litter on the ground and stuff like that. And then, I couldn't hear what the tannoy was because Celtic fans are singing and dancing and laughing. And then, obviously the bit is what it should be, and these people are writing nice things, exciting, thrilling, and, you know, that type of thing. So I get what the gist of the video was. The gist of the video was, your point, see, for the local residents, just because they live next to a football ground, their life shouldn't be shit.
Put
up with people urinating in their streets, dropping litter,
leaving wine bottles and stuff.
Taking their carry out. They shouldn't be having to wait all that. Kids shouldn't be thinking it's a scary thing, right? Gets back to my point about obnoxious people parking their own place. Right, so I get what that point was. So we are laughing at that. Go to the forum, and John Paul Taylor says, let me just play a video that's been made by local residents. And whilst it wasn't the same as the Rangers one, it was the same theme. It was showing Celtic Park, all the people arriving, and then it's speaking to local residents who are saying, this play park on a match day is Celtic fans will come here and they'll bring their carry outs and they'll get pissed and the kids can't come out to play and all this sort of stuff, right? And you're listening to it and you're thinking, you're right, you know, you and I are fortunate. I can pick and choose where I own a house. Not everybody around Celtic Park has had the choice necessarily of a great choice of where they live in the general vicinity of where they want to be. You know, being able to say, well, the people don't have to live there. It's not as easy as that. And I get all of that. And I have a lot of sympathy. Somebody then did raise the point. See all this thing about drinking and people getting pissed, and that's nothing to do with cars.
It's against the law as well, so the police should be dealing with that.
It's the police dealing with antisocial behaviour. Mm-hmm. It's nothing to do with cars.
I know.
But what I'm seeing a common theme, then John Paul Taylor tells us, then JP tells us that this is being supported by a charity called Thrive, which is about local communities, and it's a government-assisted charity. Which is looking to do the same thing at Ibrox, Hampden, Celtic Park, Dundee. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
So I have been like you and been thinking this might be kicked into the long grass by a change of council. Then JP tells the meeting, because I make the point, right, well, that's fair enough, but football puts a lot of money into the local economy.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, yeah, we need to work together, but your point of earlier of penalising the many just because of the antisocial behaviour of the few, this is antisocial behaviour. This is not a football issue. This is an antisocial behaviour issue, and this is a breaking the law issue. Deal with that. The SFA should be standing up for football and saying, we do a lot. Use some of the taxpayers' money. Use some of the money that football pays in taxes to properly police to police events. We pay plenty of policing bills. Celtic pay £1 million in rates. Use some of that money. JP then says, Stuart Regan supports this Thrive initiative.
Oh, surely not.
Yep.
Well, Stuart Regan is irrelevant as far as I'm concerned, because I think Celtic and Rangers together have got more clout than Regan will ever have in
his
life.
Yeah, the problem is that Celtic have written to clubs. Hibs are affected by it as well. So Celtic have written to Partick Thistle and Rangers, because Thistle will be affected as well, and have had no response from either of them.
That's terrific. There's two things that spring to mind for me here. The first thing is that according to information that I read, that Celtic Park and Ibrox Park and around the new Hydro SEC area were the three areas that they wanted to have restrictions over parking or where cars could be. So it's kind of interesting to note that it's still on the cards that they're going to go through with Celtic and they're going to go through with Rangers, but I do notice that for some reason the SEC and the Hydro area has been taken out of it. And I think it's another indication of, nice people go to pop concerts and go to see Rod Stewart or take that. But it's basically football fans that are in Celtic Park and Ibrox, therefore they deserve to be treated differently. There's no doubt in my mind that's the case. Another thing I think that nobody has thought about yet as well is, if you're going to have these parking restrictions, then it will lead to people walking more, which some people may argue is a good thing.
Yep.
Now, I drive through Bridgeton Cross on the way home, past the horrible pubs that London Road, just at the Big Umbrella. There's about two or three of them there. And I've seen at least three instances this season of intimidation of Celtic fans on the way by that have nearly ended up in fights.
Yep.
And now that's only the ones that I'm getting to see. So if you're having more people walking by and they're walking through Bridgeton Cross, then I'm sorry to bring it up, but there is history at Bridgeton Cross.
Absolutely.
People actually die, and people have been badly attacked. People have been scarred for life. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible area. And if you're going to encourage people to away for the car in order to walk around about that area, and it's not just that, but Duke Street's a bad area as well at times. There's been instances, I've heard the instances around that area as well. So God forbid that the first Celtic fan that gets attacked at Bridgeton Cross and is badly harmed, then the council are going to have this for conscience.
Absolutely. And as I say, I understand from the antisocial behaviour part of it. But the simple thing is, Celtic pay £1 million in rates, they pay plenty of taxes, and they pay for a police presence. Now, as I often joke, if I could hit the away support from my seat at a game, rather than be arrested, I should be put forward for the UK Olympics team for javelin throwing or something like that, because if I can hit the away support from where I sit, I don't need the police to... There's no need for police to be where we are.
No.
When Celtic play Ross County, is there any need for police anywhere?
You do need a police presence of sorts, a minimal police presence. But the point I would make is that you see police, where I sit at Celtic Park, I can see under the tunnel that's next to the main stand and the Jock Stein stand. And where any time of winning the league, where the guys come on with the banners and stuff, you know, they keep them in there. Now, I can see maybe 40 or 50 police congregating in there at each home game. They're not doing anything. They're just standing in a huddle talking to each other. Now, I appreciate they're there for a reason. They're there for crowd control, should they be needed. But the point I would be making is, you don't need that volume of police inside the ground. But if you have problems outside the ground with the poor people around the stadium who can't, their kids can't play because there's guys drinking on that, then they'd be better employed being outside rather than inside. Because the stewards can basically look after the inside of the stadium with a minimal police presence. And there is a police control room as well that has video and the state-of-the-art stuff. So the actual police, the use of police time, in my opinion, would be better used outside the stadium before and after the event.
And that's my point. See, if all this antisocial behaviour's going on, there's plenty of police around. Celtic play, you know, football pays through the nose for police.
Of course.
Get those people out dealing with where the antisocial behaviour is. Because what? instead of videoing football fans singing a song that a police officer has to be trained to be told that it's offensive for him to be offended by it. See, instead of doing all of that, you know, to use that old hackneyed phrase when people have a go at the police, go and catch real criminals. So what we're told is, there are football fans singing songs that people don't like, but it's, instead of doing that, at the same time, we're being presented with a video where residents are talking about criminal behaviour. Proper criminal, proper dysfunctional behaviour that is impacting on people's lives. You know, the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act, somebody is offended by it. You know, and these residents were talking about situations where people were making their lives intolerable. That's a much bigger crime. So seeing the first step, before you go down the route of creating a 1 kilometre exclusion zone, deal with the crime that you've just told us is happening right now, that you're too busy filming football fans singing songs you don't like to catch.
The other point I would make is, I know somebody that's got a flat in the city centre, and he says that he is constantly kept awake at night by people singing and smashing bottles and stuff when the pub's shut and when the clubs are coming out. So basically on a Friday and a Saturday, any time between 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning, he's in an expensive flat as well, and he says it's murder. He says that the noise and the antisocial behaviour. So are we going to shut down pubs and clubs in the city centre? You know, there is this knee-jerk reaction
it gets back to your point, and the point we always make, let's go after the dirty down market football.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So, not to have a podcast of downers, but if anybody listening to this was unaware, and even if you only go to 3 games a season, in fact, probably if you go to 3 games a season, this is more likely to affect you because you'll not get yourself a used to place to go to. Mm-hmm. Right to Glasgow City Council.
Yep. Well, I have to say that the latest reply I have from them said that at the moment the consultation process is not taking place and that these measures will not be in place for the start of the season. So that sort of cheered me up a wee bit, because I'm sure I read previously that they wanted it in place for the start of the season.
They did, but they must go through a consultation because I've had the same conversation. They must go through a consultation.
I mean, what's kind of annoying is that when I wrote to them and they said, the consultation period has not started yet. And I said, well, can you keep my email and use it as part of the con? No, you'll make back when it starts. And I said, how will I know when it starts? It's in the Evening Times, or it'll be in lampposts around about the areas affected. So there's always been a thing about the council. You know, I can get back years with the council, but when I stayed in Glasgow, they do have an underhand way of doing things, and then they tell you, oh, but we advertise it. But if you don't buy the Evening Times, who buys the Evening Times these days? Very few people.
Yep.
So, and you're not really going to check the council website. It's a dull website. You know, it's not a kind of...
I think councils and the government go to specialist IT suppliers to provide unnavigatable websites.
Yeah. Websites. Isn't it a great website? I noticed that myself. Another thing as well is I found it very difficult to find the exact person to contact.
Yes.
I had to email the generic council email and say, I want to name a person who's, it's actually a guy called George Gillespie, who's a top man. And when I sent him the email, he delegated it onto one of his minions underneath him. But it was really difficult to find out exactly who do you email here.
I tell you what, see when we post this podcast up on the site, we'll give the contact details of who to contact to Glasgow City Council.
Yeah. And it is important that people do contact, because as you said earlier there, if nobody complains, then they'll carry this through. And it will affect virtually everybody. I know a lot of guys go on supporters buses, and certainly...
it will affect supporters buses if there's 300 extra buses on the road.
Well, this is it. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Not that there will be, but you get my point.
Yeah, you know, if there'll be an increase in traffic in that respect. And they've also shut London Road recently, which I think is a good thing, because in the old days, the buses would go along London Road, they would park across the road from the old school, and guys could get the bus into the city centre. But they've made London Road after the final whistle a sort of pedestrian precinct, if you like, because there's no traffic.
Which came as news to the woman that I spoke to from Glasgow City Council about six weeks ago.
Oh.
No, because I was talking about, where are you going to put all those buses? Well,
that's right.
We'll get first bus to queue them up outside London Road. London Road is shut on match day.
That's right.
And
so it could be as well, because it makes the crowd dispersing much, much easier.
Yes.
And it makes it much, much safer.
So what she said, no, it's not. And I said, from Springfield Road to London Road Police Station is shut to traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
The new dual carriageway, whatever it's called, the Clydeway, whatever, it is shut down to the first set of traffic lights.
Yeah, from the Fort Jory Way down virtually to you're near like Shawfield at that point when you get down there.
So... And so this is what started to really rile me when I was speaking to the women.
Mm-hmm.
The women's saying, oh, we've decided this is what we want to do, although we will be going through a consultation process, but this is all about getting cars off the road and this is what we're going to do and blah, blah, blah. And then you start to speak to her about, well, but how are you going to get them onto the trains? You need to know the capacity. Well, we'll find out. We're in discussions with ScotRail. No, I know the capacity. And so that means everybody's going by bus, and you need 280 buses. Well, we're talking to First Bus. You don't need to speak to First Bus. I can tell you they're not going to supply you with 280 new buses. And then, where are you going to put the buses? London Road. London Road is shut. No, it's not. Yes, it is. I go to every home game, it's shut.
It actually makes you despair, because the council employees, if you like, who want to bring in these new ideas and mad schemes, they clearly haven't done their homework. It's actually embarrassing. And it's annoying as well, because this is going to affect an awful lot of people. Ourselves included, and
public transport, you'll be affected, because there'll be more Celtic fans on public transport, impacting. It's bad enough trying to get to Marnock Station or Bryston Station or wherever.
And if you go in London Road after a Celtic game, the when you get by Bridgeton Cross, it's almost a bottleneck from the Londoner pub all the way through the bars into the city centre.
Yep.
It's almost as if the traffic's flowing perfectly and you could put all these buses in there. It's quite a narrow bit of road, and there's cars parked on both sides of the road, obviously, because it's a residential area, and it's hard to negotiate your way through the traffic.
Do you know you'd be just as well doing with that volume of buses? Not that they would do this. Not that they're going to have this volume of buses. But technically, if they did, you'd be just as well sticking the buses in one big long line. And actually, what we all do is we all just get on the back of the bus and then just walk all the way through the bus to the end, because the queue of buses of 300 buses is going to, plus all the existing buses, that would take you
right
down the bars
side,
anyway.
I know.
Bonkers.
It's a ludicrous idea. It just shows how it's ill thought through, and I have to say, it's typical of local politicians who don't, I've not got a high opinion of politicians, generally speaking, but even less so than councillors. I think they're the worst example.
Well, I'm sure, actually, I do know there's a couple of them listening to this, so I'm sure they'll take their comments on board.
I don't say this lightly, there's actually a nutter who represents the Carlton ward who is advocating a 2-kilometre radius.
Well, that's just it.
because he knows the score, because he knows that when the kilometre radius comes in, the people in the Carlton are going to be the worst affected, because people are going to park all around about that area, which isn't a problem now, but it will be when the kilometre radius comes in.
Well, because I asked the woman, has she had any dialogue with South Lanarkshire Council? No, because Celtic Park's in Glasgow. Aye, see, you're 1 kilometre. It takes you right to the edge of the Glasgow-South Lanarkshire boundary. So you're going to have these extra people in South Lanarkshire. No, we've not spoken to them.
And I mean, there's probably a councillor in Shettleston and a councillor in Duke Street, and whatever area that comes under, who they're going to have their concerns as well, because it's the old NIMBY attitude, not in my backyard.
Exactly.
You know, people don't mind a problem if it's half a mile away and all that, but no, it comes near me.
Let's move on from the doom and gloom of the parking restrictions and on to Thursday night's game against Thistle. So tell me what your team's going to be.
Gordon will be in goals because he wants continuity, obviously, in that respect. I think he'll go for a strong 11, so I think you're talking about Lustig. It wouldn't surprise me if Shevchenko come back in rather than Simunovic, because it's very rarely for Simunovic to play so many games in a row. So maybe Shevchenko, Boyata and Tierney. Then you go into the midfield, where you have... Is Brown still... Is he back?
Brown's back. I think he was suspended for the Aberdeen game and the... St Johnson. I think he was suspended for those two games and was told to go on holiday for 10 days.
So with that being the case, then he comes back into the midfield with Armstrong, and you'll have Callum McGregor just in front of them. And then on either side, you will have Sinclair and either Roberts or Forrest, depending on what Brendan sees.
Who are you going for?
I think in the current form, that Roberts is at a wee edge. I think last 5 or 6 games, he's really come on to not that he was playing badly, but he's come on to a real good game.
I was actually saying this to someone. He's come into form at exactly the same moment he came to form last season, because although everybody talked about him being great, actually it was the last sort of, it was from about March onwards.
Yeah, last half dozen games or so, wasn't it? And then up front you've got Griffiths. There isn't a great deal of options for the striker's role, so Griffiths is going to play up there. So the only thing I would say is that, you know, will Rogic get a game? You know, maybe Gimbo coming at right back, but it would surprise me if Brendan, he won't make sweeping changes, but he is in the habit of, you know, like one or two, so it wouldn't surprise me if a couple of guys get rested. But I think generally speaking, it'll be a strong 11.
And the score?
Celtic by a couple of goals, 2-0, 3-1, that kind of thing. I have to say here as well that let me pay tribute to Partick Thistle this season. I think for a club with Thistle's resources to finish 6th in the SPL is an outstanding achievement. So, as in, I think Alan Archibald, as a manager, doesn't get the credit he deserves, because he's not a publicity-seeking guy. He doesn't shout and bawl when things go against him. He's always very measured and very calm. I think he's quite an impressive character.
Yep.
And I think it says a lot for the way Thistle are running their club at the moment, that there's a lot of good things happening at Firhill, and that's reflected in the performances of the team.
Also says a lot about how Hearts have been since Cather was appointed, that Thistle are only 4 points off Hearts.
Yeah, I think next season's going to be a big one for Cather. I think taking over for Nielsen, it was always going to be a tough ask, because the players would be used to Nielsen, and Cather is a completely different kettle of fish for what Nielsen was.
He wants a completely different style of football, so...
Yeah, he's a different manner as well. He's a more measured guy. I think Nielsen was quite aggressive and in your face, which isn't a bad thing for a manager, I've got to say. You know, they've all got their ways of motivating their players, but he seems to be more of a more genteel and more measured, more calm, and more learned, if you like. So I think next season's a biggie for him. He'll really need to have a good start of the season, and he's going to be in trouble.
Aye, and he can't have Hibs kicking about above him.
Well, this is it. It's more pressure on him, because Hibs are coming up, and Lennon, you know, he's been around the block. He's got more experience, and I think Hibs will benefit from Lennon's experience next season.
So you're going for 2-0 or 3-1?
Celtic by 2 goals.
Excellent. Okay, well, with that, I will say...
One other thing, just in tribute to the team and Brendan Rodgers, to have achieved 100 points in any league and they're 1 goal away from 100 goals, that is some achievement. That, it doesn't matter if it's the German League or the Maltese League or the English Premiership or the Scottish Premiership, that is some achievement to get 100 points and 100 goals in the same season.
Absolutely, and that's... I think that's the type of thing that's driving. I think getting back to the earlier point, I think Bendon's just driven by nobody will be able to come up with any excuse for not praising the club and the players' achievements.
Yeah.
Anyway, with that, I will say St Anthony. Thanks very much.
Pleasure, Harry, as always.
Cheers. We will be having more podcasts along soon, as long as life doesn't get too much in the way. And obviously we've got the Lisbon celebrations coming up between the Hearts Flag Day on Sunday and the possible treble chance against Aberdeen in the Cup the following week. So there'll be podcast stuff about that. Most of what's being organised with the Lubo Henrik game following the cup final, the Hydro event is for Celtic FC Foundation, so a bumper town for the foundation, and they have the golf day coming up in the middle of June. So if you're a golfer, I'm not sure if there's any golfing places left, but get in contact with the foundation and you'll be able to find out about that. Anyway, enough of me. I am absolutely certain that there'll be room for a podcast following the Craig White case, but obviously none of us want to go to jail for speaking out of turn. The only thing I will say is the most remarkable thing I've found about the Craig White case is so far this is the case for the prosecution. Who can wait to the defence to come along? Anyway, this is a Celtic fans podcast about the Celtic, the greatest football team the world has ever known. We have our winning run to, or our unbeaten run to finalise with three domestic games. Here's hoping it happens. Here's hoping we get the second treble, only the second treble of my lifetime. We can celebrate the 50th anniversary of Lisbon with all the gusto that that deserves, and then we can talk about other things through the summer. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, St Anthony, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.